that's been our problem the whole year is bad turnovers. It's not driving the ball and a guy taking a charge at the rim. It's just bad turnovers. And then we got some of our young guys just, I don't want to say they're soft because it's not fair, but they don't have the toughness to come up with certain basketballs yet. And that they've got to get better. They wait on the ball. In college, you wait on the ball, you're in trouble.
81-76, disappointed Frank Martin after a five-point loss to Mississippi State at home last night. First Mississippi State road win in more than a year. Ben Howland was happy to point out in his post-game interview on the SEC Network last night. Does not do certainly doesn't help the Gamecocks in their efforts to make the postseason at this point, dropping to below 500 in conference play. As I looked at the SEC standings this morning, it was hard to count up the whole thing. A six-way tie now for sixth place. Carolina is at 4-5 in the SEC, including Mississippi State now after that one. And you look ahead at the schedule, it's going to be an uphill climb for sure with what Carolina has left. I think the next five opponents within the top 35 in the RPI in the country, starting with at Texas A&M this Saturday. But we start with that game last night, the Colonial Life Arena. It was a late one and a tough one for the Gamecocks, who were doing everything they could to hang in, minus Justin Manaya, who was not playing in the ball game because of a sprained ankle. Clearly, the Gamecocks, Bill, missed him on defense. That was the glaring part to me. The way that Mississippi State just started the game, the way that both teams started the game was really surprising. First 10 minutes of the ball game, both teams on pace to score 80 points. Both teams came into the ball game. The top two defenses in the SEC giving up right around 65 points per game. There were a lot of uncontested buckets early, and I think that was a sign of bad things to come for both teams really on the defensive end. The Gamecocks couldn't hit free throws down the stretch. That certainly played into this thing. They made 18 of their first 20 and then only made 3 of their last 7 down the stretch, and just did not have enough of a career-high night for Frank Booker. 25 points kind of goes by the wayside, and the Gamecocks lose it by 5. Their third straight loss at home and now third loss in their last 4 games, certainly putting a damper on a bit of a what had been kind of a resurgence this year, or maybe for the first time, really a huge surge in what Frank Martin and company were trying to do. How do you see what now last night?
You know, bad. I don't say bad defense, but I don't know if that's
Frank Martin did.
Okay, I was going to say it's not. I don't know if it's totally unfair to say that, because 81 points. I was trying to look back and just see the last time that South Carolina gave up 80 plus points in a ball game, and it was kind of one of those things is. Late in the ball game, I look up and
it's been a long time.
Yeah, that's
I'm looking at it right now.
Missouri had 79. Missouri, and I kind of, for some reason, don't remember that. I think I blocked that game out. But 79 points from Missouri earlier this season.
They haven't given up 80 points this season.
No, they haven't. They've given up 80 points this season. I think the last time was Kentucky last year. Actually, it was 90. They gave up 90 to Alabama in the 4 overtime game, so you can kind of excuse that one.
Right.
But 85 to Kentucky, actually 83 to Arkansas last year, and 81 to Florida, so not as bad as I thought. But I think that was the first thing that stood out last night. Late in the game, South Carolina trying to rally, and I get going back to the Vanderbilt-Kentucky game where Kentucky came back on Tuesday night down 5 with 40 seconds to go and rallied, but you got to get stops. You got to make plays down the stretch on defense. And simply put, Mississippi State last night, look, they made some tough shots, give them credit. But as Frank Martin said, South Carolina simply couldn't guard the basketball. And if Mississippi State wanted to go to the basket, there was a lot of times they went unimpeded to the basket. 30 of 58 last night, 51% from the field. South Carolina didn't shoot the ball bad. I mean, it wasn't a bad offensive night. You mentioned Frank Booker with 25. They got 18 from Silva, who stays out of foul trouble and has 3 fouls for the game. 18-6.
Because it was 12 seconds, I think, foul number one. It took him 12 seconds to get. Not a good start.
Likes to warm up quickly, but get invested in the game. But, I mean, the Gamecocks last night, again, 7 of 24 from three-point range, 30%, 29%. Now, obviously not good. You'd like them to shoot better, but that seems about right. But Mississippi State last night, you go through the numbers, 30 of 58 from the floor, 14 of 15 from the foul line.
That's the big one. Don't just gloss over that. 14 of 15, I think they were shooting 66% or something from the line coming into the ballgame.
Yeah.
You do have to give that team credit for making the plays.
Right.
But coming at it from our viewpoint, our perspective here on the home of the Gamecocks, certainly a lot of things that Carolina could have done better. And to me, just in general, in the first 5 minutes, really, it was apparent that this team wasn't going to have the energy that we had seen become pretty consistent in the last handful of games that really elevated them to the next level. It looked like that four-game stretch against ranked opponents sapped something out of them, and maybe it was simply maybe that's an oversimplification, and it was the fact that they didn't have their best defensive player available, because that's what Justin Manaea is, especially from a guard standpoint, and that made it look like that. But you're talking about 50-50 balls, and Mississippi State's really good at blocking shots. They did that, and they made the plays when it mattered down the stretch, and the Gamecocks, again, lose a tough one at home.
It was. And now, again, if they bounce back and win two of three, say against Florida, Tennessee, and Auburn coming up in a week, then that game will be kind of negated. But certainly you put yourself behind the eight ball. When you talk about it, I thought going into last, you have to, one of the things that you needed to do to make it easy, I should say, on yourself was defend home court. And I don't think there is an easy game in the SEC. You look at what Vanderbilt did mm-hmm. the other night against Kentucky. There's not an easy game, but certainly that was one you felt like you needed to have. But again,
whoa. Don't gloss over that one either. If you have to win a game at home, you want to take on a team that's lost 13 in a row on the road.
Yeah.
That was Mississippi State.
Yeah. But again, if you go out, you know, in terms of RPI and in terms of resume, this sounds weird, you would trade a win at Auburn at the end of the season for a loss at home. Sure, ideally, you win both, and
maybe,
and
just
it doesn't
this week,
matter.
A win at Texas A&M, probably you would trade from an RPI standpoint.
Maybe so.
They might even each other out.
Yeah.
The season's certainly not over, and Frank Martin talked about it going in, that you never say a must-win to a team. You got to win this game to get into the NCAA tournament. What happens if you lose?
Yeah.
And certainly Carolina can dig themselves out of the hole, because you look at that upcoming schedule, next five games with against teams with an RPI in the top 35, that gives you the opportunity.
Right.
But it also makes it very, very difficult. And if Carolina plays like it played last night, they're not going to win any of those games.
Well, I think that this team, you go back to the December team that we saw, nobody was talking to NCAA tournament.
Right.
Then they go 2-2 in that four-game stretch we just talked about. All of a sudden, the expectations were
well, they're great. In the conversation.
Yeah, they rise, and people go, okay, well, wait a minute, maybe this team's a little bit better than we anticipated. And all of a sudden, I think people start to pay attention again, and now you drop a game that you really shouldn't have. Let's not sit here and pretend like that's, but they shouldn't have dropped that game last night. And so now you move forward, and you know, the point guard situation will get resolved. Unfortunately, it won't get resolved till next year when you get Rob Felder back and maybe you're able to get another year. I don't know where you go with that. I think you got to recruit another point guard. Jermaine Cousinard coming in is not a true point guard. I don't know what I would be surprised if they took two more players. I don't know how much attrition you'll see in the offseason. It seems like two guys leaving would be a lot. I feel like Martin probably likes his team, unless guys just up and leave. Not that that would be a shock. It's not like we haven't seen that before, but you look at this team, and point guard certainly is a situation. Wesley Myers had been playing better of late. Last night is not a performance that he will talk about when his career finishes up. You go back to last night and
8 points. Yeah, much better than the 2 points that we saw in the game before. But
he
also had 5 turnovers, most of those coming in the first half. The Gamecocks had 10 turnovers by halftime. And we heard Frank Martin in his comments there talk about those turnovers. The number overall not huge at 13, but how they turned it over in the second half led immediately to buckets on the other end.
21 minutes last night. I mean, that's the number that jumped. Yeah, 21 minutes for Wesley Myers. That's the number. You have to have him much closer to 30 when he's been effective. He's given you he's definitely given you over 25. It's been closer to 30. And last night, he was at about at 1 point. I can't remember exactly late in the game. Hassani Gravett wasn't being very effective last night. 24 minutes last night, 1 turnover. He did have 7 assists. I just looked at that number, didn't realize he had that many. But 4 points, wasn't giving you a scoring punch. David Beatty was the guy, again, where I was going with that. 23 minutes last night, came off, had 6 points. And at times he was having to handle the point guard role, something that he's really not good at.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the offensive struggles. The real struggles was on the defensive end, where Mississippi State, again, shoots better than 51% from the floor and gets that 5-point win. The Gamecocks now losers of 3 of their last 4. This one at home to a team that hadn't won on the road in 14, I guess this is the first time in 14 tries more than a year ago, was Mississippi State's last road win. Hope your Thursday morning is off to a little bit of better start than how things ended up at the Colonial Life Arena last night. Of course, most of the conversation here on 107.5 The Game yesterday centering around off-the-court issues with Missouri. Nothing came out of Missouri, unlike what we projected, Bill, in yesterday's program. We thought we would have heard something out of Missouri and their athletic director, Jim Sterk, after the comments he made on radio that basically said that Dawn Staley promoted an atmosphere, an unhealthy atmosphere at the Colonial Life Arena. Ray Tanner and Dawn Staley saying the issue will be resolved, and they are confident that, I guess Ray Tanner going so far as to say he's hoping to get a retraction from Jim Sterk in Missouri. We'll see what happens. It's kind of odd. I think we're both surprised that that thing did not move forward to some extent from the SEC office or from Missouri side of things. We'll see if it happens this morning or anytime today. Just kind of a stain over the Missouri-South Carolina rivalry. To me, it almost shifted completely to the Missouri side of things. Just the confusion Ray Tanner mentioned multiple times about the comment, I think, is what sticks out to me and what most of us identify with as well. We'll continue to talk about that. And also, man, the headline on ESPN.com this morning that LeBron James would consider joining the Golden State Warriors. That just started me off in a bad way.
Yeah, and I like the NBA, and that would pretty much ruin the NBA for me. Like,
holy moly.
I mean, good for Golden State. Like, not that they're a perennial power in terms of, you know, like being the Lakers or the Celtics. But, yeah.
I mean, good for them. They haven't done anything. This is just a story. It's probably just to create hype and make us mad this morning. But that's certainly, if that was the goal, it got me off to a bad start there.
We can't guard point guards, and we're not really getting much, you know, offensively from our point guards. And that's not good. But that's those guys, you know, they come every day and they work, and we'll stay the course. And we you know, kind of figured it out 2 weeks ago. Hopefully we can figure it out again.
Frank Martin, after a disappointing 5-point loss last night to Mississippi State, snaps a 13-game road losing streak for the Bulldogs. Carolina now even with Mississippi State in the SEC standings at 4-5. They're two of six teams in the SEC bunched right there in a tie for sixth place behind Alabama, who lost last night. Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Auburn still sits at the top of the conference standings. Get you some more SEC scores, but Carolina battled back. You got to give them credit. They didn't have their A game last night. It was obvious that the energy wasn't quite there. Playing without Justin Manaea, it was wildly obvious as well. That really took a toll on them on the defensive end of things. He had a sprained ankle. Why is that curious, sir?
Well, it's not curious. It's just a little bit, I don't want to say amazing. I feel like amazing is the wrong word, but how far Justin Manaea has come in, what, 10 months, I guess, coming from a guy that, like, you're like, all right. I mean, remember, Justin Manaea could have gone to a year of post-grad.
Right.
I think he's kind of underaged. He's one of those kids that's kind of he was a senior, but because of his age, he could have qualified for a post-grad and was a little underage, so to speak. And he was kind of, I don't want to say a throw-in recruit, but kind of one of the last guys out there, and they land him, and you think, okay, this guy maybe down the line will be a good player, but all of a sudden he's in the starting lineup. And then last night, I missed the tweet from Gamecock Basketball that came out a little bit before the game saying that he would be unavailable because of a sprained ankle. And then all of a sudden, you know, about the beginning of the game, I noticed he wasn't starting and looked it up, and you're right, you noticed how much they missed. They missed not only that, but his offensive presence. I mean, defensively and offensively, and it kind of makes you realize how much of an impact he's made on this team now through his first, 20 games.
Frank Martin talked about it at the end of the Texas Tech game. I guess Manaea gets his fourth foul around the six-minute mark. He has to take him out, and it did not go well for the Gamecocks after that, really defensively. I think 17-5, Texas Tech outscored Carolina. And Texas Tech, we just watched the highlight here in the All-South Federal Credit Union Studios on SportsCenter. They get a buzzer beater in overtime last night from Keenan Evans, the guy who lit up USC on Saturday for 31. He lights up Texas last night for 38 and is certainly making a national name for himself, I think, at this point, to be one of an All-American type guy, one of the better guards in America.
Blatant push off at the very end.
Such a grump this morning.
I mean, did you see it? Like,
he's taking it out on us that he decided to go to that 8:30 game last night, and we're bearing the brunt of that this morning.
Left arm. I don't understand why I'm a grump. Did you see it, Jordan? Did you see the push-off? I mean, of course, Jordan saw it. Jordan, you hear his name, Jordan. I mean, the most famous push-off.
Don't make the intern have to agree with
you. The second most famous push-off ever, the first one, Rod Gardner, of course, but the second most famous push-off was poor Byron Russell just trying to do his job defensively and Jordan shoving him underneath the basket for a pull-up jumper.
Mm-hmm.
Game six, I believe, there. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous. But, it's Texas Tech is a pretty good basketball team. I go back to that.
You were the guy that played pickup basketball and called offensive fouls, right, when you're on defense?
I mean,
that's a push-off. That's our ball. That's our ball, bro.
Yeah.
Let's argue about it for the next 7 minutes and not play anymore.
You don't argue about it. You take the ball and you go to your side of the floor. Or you turn around and you go to the top of the key
and all the other,
when you're checking it out.
The rest of the guys are still on the other end. And you're like, guys, come on. It's our ball.
Yeah. Yeah, you pushed off. Or I got my chest in front. It was a charge.
The old pickup charge. It's a great call.
Yeah. That's a competitor, man. Showed up, I was ready to go. Headband and all.
Other SEC scores last night, not surprising that Tennessee, they continue to look stronger and stronger, I think. And that win they had, who did they just blow out? They blew out Iowa State in the Big 12 SEC Challenge in Ames. And last night, Iowa State handles West Virginia very easily. And West Virginia just has fallen off a cliff from being number two in the country to now, I think they lost four out of the last five or something crazy like that. They gave up 90-plus points, I think, last night. But I'm getting a little distracted. SEC scores for you. Tennessee, 84-61 over LSU. And the little bit more surprising score last night is that Alabama, who had looked like, again, they're kind of up and down. They're all over the map. Sometimes they look really good. Sometimes, like last night, they lose by 9 points at home to Missouri, who is part of that six-way tie now for sixth place at 4-5 in the conference, and Alabama is one game better at 5-4, Tennessee at 6-3, and LSU at 3-6. That's where the SEC sits this morning. A huge cluster. Carolina certainly not out of it, but did not do themselves any favors last night, losing by 5 points at home to Mississippi State. Quindary Weatherspoon and his brother Nick, I thought, were really good. Carolina couldn't guard either one of those guys all night long, especially in the second half with the older Weatherspoon there. Quindary scoring 14 of his 18 in the second half. He played like an experienced senior, and he came through in clutch moments down the stretch. When it was a three-point ball game with about 45 seconds to go, Carolina really fought to get to that point. And I thought they might be able to grit it and gut it out. It's weird that they've been able to do that more on the road here in recent games than they have at home. But they get a relatively good look. Wes Myers gets a three. It does not go down. And not only that, Carolina goes to foul. And Mississippi State does a great job and just gets a dunk on the other end.
Yeah.
So it changes from a possible tie ball game to a five-point game just like that. And then the spirit was kind of done. And there were only 30 seconds left in the game at that point. Also, the fact that Mississippi State just made free throws time and time again. I mean, 14 out of 15 for a team that came in towards the bottom of the SEC. They made the plays that deserved to win the ball game last night. Carolina couldn't come up with them.
Well, they're not Mississippi State, we talk about it, 16-6 on the season after last night, 4-5 in the SEC. This was a team that really actually got off to a great start. I think they were, I'm looking real quickly, they were, I think, 9-0. Is what they were, and then lost at Cincinnati, then managed to rattle off several more victories. I mean, this was a team that I think at one point was 13-1, 14-1.
Mm-hmm, but the RPI number's not very good.
No,
I think
you're
in the 70s.
You look at who they beat, and it wasn't – they beat Dayton early on in the season. Other than that, it was FAMU, Florida A&M. They beat Stephen F. Austin, Jacksonville State, North Dakota State. You're right.
Kids call it FAMU, by the way.
Is that what we're calling it nowadays?
So you know.
Okay.
Just trying to keep you cool.
I'm trying to hang with the
while
kids.
While you're making the offensive foul calls in your pickup games.
Short shorts and headbands, too.
Guys, you guys play like FAMU. I don't know what you're doing there, pushing off all the time.
Maction Man doesn't know FAMU, really.
Right. Well, it's close to the MEAC and the MAC.
This is why we brought in a young intern here. I expect him to keep me young on the FAMU. Good to hear.
That's what he's here
Completely
for.
Let me down. I don't know what he's doing over here, but just – happy to be here, I guess. But you're right. But Mississippi State is not a bad team. Ben Howland's done a good job. But that goes back to what you and I've kind of discussed over the last 2 weeks, just in regards to the SEC as a whole. And you're pointing out six teams in a six-way tie for
sixth place.
Okay. you know, again, it's a very, very competitive league. I think it's as good as I've seen it in 20 years. Now, again,
nobody's arguing that.
I don't think there's a national title contender in there, but that goes back. And South Carolina's right in the middle of it. Now that goes back. You got to try and hold serve at home, and they didn't do that last night. So now you got to go and get one on the road that maybe you weren't expected to get.
And we've seen Carolina do that already with a home win against Kentucky and a road win against Florida. So it's certainly not outside the realm of possibility, but a tough loss last night to Mississippi State for sure.
We have to believe that we can win the game in our style of play. We got a young team. You know, they only know one way of playing, and that's just all out giving effort. And that's the route that we're going to go. You know, I do think we have an advantage in the inside, and we got to utilize that.
Dawn Staley talking about tonight's 7 o'clock matchup against number one UConn. You can hear it starting on our sister station tonight, 1320 The Fan, and we'll take it over here on 107.5 The Game after Frank Martin wraps up Carolina Calls at 8 o'clock. Should be a really interesting matchup. In the past, it just has seemed a little different. Maybe it's because of this cluster of games we're getting at Colonial Life Arena, Bill, here in the last 4 to 5 days, starting with Texas Tech, top 15, top 10 type team in men's college basketball in that SEC Big 12 Challenge on Saturday, then the Missouri game and the rivalry that thing has become, and then last night Mississippi State, and now tonight you get UConn. So maybe it's been a little more isolated and pointed towards on the schedule in years past, but also you have to factor in that the Gamecocks come into this thing with the defending national championship or the defending national champions and not UConn.
Yeah, I don't know how much that matters. I mean, the teams, well, for South Carolina is so different now, having lost three girls that went in the top 10 of the WNBA draft. And, again, South Carolina just trying to, even at number 7, just trying to really find their way. And Connecticut's such a juggernaut. Now, like you said, you can't look at their record. You can't look at their previous games because, man, there's nobody in the American Conference that can compete with Connecticut in terms of women's basketball.
If you need examples of that, their last two games, the final scores have been 98-45, 93-36.
Yeah, okay.
The game before that against Dawn Staley's former Temple team, 113-57.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. It's not it, and that's honestly why Gino Auriemma likes playing these games now outside, because he wants his teams to be challenged going into the NCAA tournament, and he's not getting it from his conference. So, but they're still a juggernaut. They're still the best team in women's basketball. And, you know, I just think there's a different South Carolina's kind of I don't want to say rebuilding, but kind of retooling. Again, even with Asia Wilson, trying to find the right combination of girls that can go out there and give them the best chance to make a run in March and get back to the Final Four, and then get into a scenario where a one-game situation can lead you to the national championship game and then possibly winning a national championship.
I was listening to some comments from Gino Auriemma going into this thing. She mentioned just obviously that the Gamecock fan base will be ready to go, and all the support that Carolina has, the Colonial Life Arena, much different than the comments coming out of Missouri about the environment, by the way. But also he's focused on his comments anyway that stood out to me were how they have a really good player in the Gamecocks being Asia Wilson and a really good guard in Ty Harris. So you can imagine the game plan will be tailored to limiting the effectiveness there. And they did that to a pretty good degree last year in the matchup where the Gamecocks were really looking to exploit an advantage they had inside with Wilson. And at the time, Elena Coates was still healthy, and it wasn't enough for Carolina to win on the road. Auriemma pointing out what their crowd gave them and that home court advantage, and that they played maybe not even their best game, but they were able to win relatively comfortably in that one. I'm interested to see how Carolina plays tonight in these games. Felt like in the past we've never seen the Gamecocks really able to give UConn their best shot. You got to give UConn credit for obviously defensively especially limiting what Carolina could do, but I'm hoping we get to see both teams playing well, shooting the ball well, and kind of going back and forth. That would be good for women's college basketball, I think, in general.
I don't know if you agree with me. I feel like when South Carolina's played Connecticut, that they've come in with almost too much buildup to the game, and they play like a team under pressure. Whereas Connecticut, again, you know, I said this one of the first two times they played. Connecticut's used to these games. I mean, that program's built on games like South Carolina. is getting there, and they've played in more games like these now, and so the program itself is getting there. But for this, Connecticut's not going to be phased by the crowd. Connecticut's not going to be phased by they try to play almost all the top teams in women's basketball each and every year because sure. that's where they get their competition. And these type of games, the type of hype that comes with these games, it's second nature to them. It doesn't bother them. And I feel
the difference this year, though, is that they're playing the defending national champions. They're used to being the defending national champions.
That doesn't matter.
You don't think that gives them extra motivation? I think it does.
I mean, maybe extra motivation, but they're not. South Carolina's played up tight when they've played Connecticut. I mean, that's the bottom line. They've played up tight. They play like a team trying to prove something, whereas Connecticut just goes out and plays the game. And
that's the difference here. Hearing Asia Wilson yesterday say, is this a measuring stick for your program? She's like, not really. That's a lot different tone than we've heard in the last few years because the banner is in the Colonial Life Arena.
It's still Connecticut. Connecticut, even with South Carolina winning the national championship, Connecticut's still the best team in the game. I mean, that's just they are the best program. They're the best team. It doesn't have to be a measuring stick necessarily because South Carolina achieved the ultimate goal. But with that being said, it's still Connecticut. And winning a game against Connecticut is a big, big deal. There's no doubt about it. And Connecticut knows that. And they're used to getting everybody's best shot. But, the defending champion thing, I think, matters very, very little today in the grand scheme of things. Tonight. To me, it's once again a chance to take down the biggest team, the biggest program in women's basketball, and that, again, falls on the shoulders of South Carolina.
Sure, they do have the record 11 national championships, so that's why Gino Auriemma makes our Frank's Discount Tire poll question today. 30 for 30, if you haven't heard or you need a reminder, that's going to come out tonight. Interested in watching the two Bills about Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells, so we throw them in our Frank's Discount Tire poll question today, and Nick Saban as well. Who would you prefer to coach your team, Belichick, Parcells, Saban, or Auriemma? Nick Saban out to the early lead, maybe telling us where we're coming from in our college football crazy town this morning. But I think it's an interesting discussion. Bill Parcells, the biggest uphill climb, I think. Not only is he the one that hasn't coached the most recent, but also if you put his resume, I think, up from just a wins and losses standpoint and championship standpoint, you don't quite get what the other coaches have there. But what you might be missing there, if you're a younger fan, like our intern Jordan here, who might not have been exposed to Bill Parcells back in the day, kind of the mystique that goes along with him. Like, he's famous, in my mind, for that line about if you're going to cook the meal, you want to be able to shop for the groceries. Uh-huh. And being your own GM and being able to run an organization. And you feel like his cult of personality, maybe it was because he was part of those teams that had Lawrence Taylor back in the day and Harry Carson, obviously, SC State's own. Maybe it was just that they had a personality of being kind of rough and his persona was being one that he was going to be in charge and you were going to like it, or if you didn't like it, it didn't matter. So to me, it's more than just him dialing up a game plan and being X's and O's. It's kind of his whole personality going into that thing which I thought was larger than the game back in the 80s when he was at his heyday and won a Super Bowl with Jeff Hostetler playing quarterback and for the injured Phil Sims.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you just said because we had this discussion last week about guys that you would bring into the present to watch. And my list was kind of on players. It was Nolan Ryan. It was Larry Bird. It was George Rogers. And it was Jack Nicklaus because I caught them at the very end of their career where kind of the hype was, like you mentioned, I think with Larry Bird, your memory is almost of Larry Bird, more of the guy like laying on the floor at the end of the bench, not the great basketball player that had such the reputation of Larry Legend. Bill Parcells was, I guess, at his best from 83 to 90 with the Giants.
Right.
And that's Super Bowl champion, two Super Bowl championships, 86 and 90. The Bill Parcells that I kind of know is Jets Bill Parcells mm-hmm. and Cowboys Bill Parcells. And that's an average Bill Parcells. Like, you go back Jets, he went 9-7. He did have a 12-4 season with the Jets and then 8-8. And then in the Cowboys, 03, 04, 05, and 06, 10-6, 6-10, 9-7, 9-7. Like, it's that of an average coach. So this great coach, because I think Jordan said it, we were sitting here in the break, and he goes, five playoff appearances. Why is this guy so great? What has he done? And he's younger than me, and I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, the Bill Parcells I remember was an average coach.
Mm-hmm. it's I think also too because of the coaches attached to him and Bill Belichick, basically his protege, and that's a lot of what the 30 for 30 is going to be about tonight. Interested in hearing your thoughts. 803-404-6100, the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Hit us up this morning. He's at Will Gunter with one L. I'm at Tim Hill 1075, and that's where you can go on Twitter to officially vote in today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Who would you like to coach your team? Belichick, Parcells, Gino Auriemma, or Nick Saban?
We just have to go out and execute and do us, stay within our system. It is different now that both teams have national championships, but at the same time, it's the game of basketball. It's a game of runs. We're playing the same basketball that we've been playing for 4 years against them. So our biggest thing is just, like I said, staying within our system and our roles and making sure that we execute things that we need to do out there.
Asia Wilson on tonight's 7 o'clock ball game against number one ranked and undefeated UConn. Looking for her first win against UConn, looking to get her coach, Don Staley, her first win against UConn as well.
You know, I guess listening to Asia say that again and just kind of thinking about it this morning, to me it's not a big deal that both teams have national championships. But the confidence with which Asia says that makes me think maybe South Carolina goes, you know what, we're on their level now. We're as good as them. We haven't beaten them, but we have a national championship just like they have. We talked about the mentality thing earlier. I don't think it's intimidation. I think it's more pressure to go out and get that win for Dawn Staley. But that national championship giving those girls, hey, our program's as good as theirs. We have a championship just like they have some. It doesn't matter. We can compete with them. It'll be interesting to see early on tonight how they handle the moment, how they handle that again. It's going to be a different environment. It's going to be a great environment, I expect. But it's a different environment than what we saw Sunday night against Missouri.
No doubt about that. It is what has led us to today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Excuse me. The Gamecocks on ESPN, this UConn ball game at 7 o'clock. You can listen to it on our sister station, 1320, The Fan, and then we'll pick it up here on 107.5 The Game after Carolina calls. That goes until 8 o'clock. But part of the ESPN coverage will be Holly Rowe, the sideline reporter. You probably have heard by now, I think for the last 16 months, she's been battling cancer. She just put out a tweet. It says, "Dear America, I apologize in advance. One of my cancer treatment side effects is a rash. UConn at South Carolina, biggest women's basketball game of the year. It's on my face. Delightful. Pretend you don't notice. Glass half full. A scan Tuesday shows progress, but I look hideous," she says, "doing the best I can. I know expected crowd of right around capacity tonight, so right around 18,000 people should be at the arena tonight. If you happen to bump into Holly Rowe, maybe you can give her some words of encouragement there. It's certainly a brave way to approach tonight's ball game, and her bravery, just her praises have been sung throughout the sports world, being one of the good people that are part of sports and telling the sports story. Holly Rowe will be on the sideline tonight at the Colonial Life Arena, clearly dealing with serious issues there. So after tonight's game on ESPN, we will see the two Bills. This is one of the ESPN 30 for 30s, one of the more anticipated ones, I think, because of the story and the relationship between a couple of guys who publicly come off pretty gruff, don't let you in very much. I'm very interested to see after UConn and South Carolina tonight on ESPN, the two Bills and exactly where this thing goes. Bringing back the history and then hearing how they see this thing and kind of where they are now.
Yeah, not sure what I expect. I mean, with Ric Flair, I think you went in, you were kind of looking forward to what his past was and what he was like away from the camera, with certain ones with the Pony Excess.
The Ric Flair one's the last one I saw, and I was really surprised at how much we got personal.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And how it made me feel. Like, I just felt kind of sad for him.
At the end.
Yeah.
The first hour, I think it was an hour and 30 minutes, first hour, you're like, yeah, that's the guy. And then the last 30 minutes, you're like, he's got nothing. I mean, like, I say nothing. He's got money. He's doing okay. He's
right.
But
his life became Ric Flair, yeah. Wrestler.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a lot of that movie that was back in the day, The Wrestler. It's kind of dark,
yeah.
Ultimately, but a really good, really interesting, and it just grabbed your attention, right? It kept your attention, held your attention. I'm wondering, I'm guessing they won't be able to get behind the scenes nearly as much or get nearly as much from a personal perspective on these two guys. I'm really interested to see how much we get from these two. But we had them in the poll question today. Bill Belichick ends up winning the Frank's Discount Tire poll question today at Tim Hill 107.5, where you could go and officially vote this morning. The final tabs, 43% of the vote goes to Bill Belichick about who you would prefer to coach your team. That edges out Nick Saban by 4% of the vote. Gino Auriemma finishes in third, edging out Bill Parcells. Ultimately, this kind of became, who do you put in the conversation of best NFL coaches of all time? Because Belichick is kind of the runaway vote getter in that category. Obviously, the present is always on our mind more than the past, but just the sheer numbers, the five championships there. You got Chuck Knoll in the conversation back in the day with the Steelers, having won four Super Bowls. You had Don Shula in the conversation. You put Vince Lombardi in there. Joe Gibbs got a couple of nominations today as well. Bill Walsh in that conversation too. But it's an interesting one going back through history and now seeing how Bill Belichick is kind of rewriting things here in the present.
It'd be interesting. He'll go for Super Bowl number six. And here's if you need to feel a bit better about yourself or our weather today. Just saw this tweet pop up. As of 7:43 Central Time, -4 degrees in Minneapolis today.
In where?
Minneapolis.
One more time.
Am I not saying that correctly?
Tomorrow is going to be so much fun.
How do you say it?
Try one more time, please.
Minnesota.
All right.
It's, now, are they where they're at?
It's, yeah, it's near Wisconsin.
It's west of Wisconsin. Or it could be east. It could be north. It could be south. All right, I'm out of here. I didn't sleep much last night.
404-6100. Give us a call right now if you'd like to go see Def Leppard for free and Journey, Colonial Life Arena, Wednesday, August 15th. Caller number 5 is a winner. Thanks for listening. Early Game, 107.5 The Game.